From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the Leonard Lopate Show. I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org. You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
June Cross was born in 1954, the daughter of two aspiring entertainers, a white mother and a black father. When she was growing up in the 50s and 60s, she lived with black middle-class relatives in Atlantic City and sometimes led a more glamorous life with her mother in Manhattan and Hollywood. June's mother often told people she was adopted. Ms. Cross, who's worked as a producer for PBS's Frontline and for the Lara NewsHour and also at CBS News, made a documentary about her life called Secret Daughter. It won an Emmy, and now she's written a book of the same name, which is published by Viking, and brings her to my show today. Hello.
Hi. How are you, Leonard?
I'm well. You open the book with the line, "I search for my mother's face in the mirror, and I see see a stranger." You bear absolutely no resemblance, sir.
Now I do, but when I was a child, I didn't think I did.
When you looked at her, what did you see?
I saw a little girl with sort of beige skin, sort of the color that your coffee is when you put a lot of half and half in it, and very short curly hair. And my mother had long auburn hair, and my mother had green eyes, and I had brown eyes. And mostly I saw little short curly hair that would not be straight like mom's. That was the biggest difference between us.
And when did you come to understand what made you different?
It was a gradual process. You know, I think psychologists talk about racial identification growing over a period of time between 4 and 7. And I'd say I was probably really almost 7. I was sheltered. Around 7 or 8, when the Atlantic City, I grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and when the Democratic Convention came to Atlantic City in 1964, the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party had a big demonstration, and I began at that time to realize that I was part of a group of people called colored people, Negro people. Before that,
Nobody had talked to you about it? It had not been discussed?
Well, my mother had. My mother had said if I hadn't gotten darker as I'd gotten older that I could have lived with her. And that was 3 years earlier, but I thought that that was something that was particular to me. So I thought it was somehow my fault, my responsibility. I didn't understand that there were other people that shared this condition with me until I identified with the civil rights workers in Atlantic City in 64.
But she was saying, if you could pass, I would keep you. Otherwise, I'm going to have to do something. Do you have any memories of your mother and father being together?
I don't. My father was, he had actually been a fairly successful entertainer in the 30s and 40s, part of a duo called Stump and Stumpy.
Famous dancers.
That was famous dancers, played at the Apollo Theater. He was in Irving Berlin's This Is the Army, had a featured number. My mother was still trying to be an actress, and they found each other backstage at the Paramount Theater and actually remained together for about 4 or 5 years.
They ever marry?
They never got married. Which I didn't find out actually until I was about 19 or 20 years old. I thought they had been married and gotten divorced. One among the many lies that I was told when I was a kid. She left him. I was about 13 or 14 months old, and I met him when I was 5. I met him again. He came to visit me once when I was 8, and then I met him. I didn't see him anymore until I was 27.
But you must have wondered a lot. People always wonder about the missing parent.
I actually didn't.
It was just a fact of life.
What I knew about him was that he and my mother had argued a lot, that he had beaten her. I didn't care. You know, he had left us. I thought he had left us. Another one of those sort of miscommunications. It turned out she had left him. I had a father because I had my Aunt Peggy and Uncle Paul who raised me in Atlantic City, and they provided a very loving home.
Later you had a stepfather.
And then I had Larry, stepfather.
Storch.
And then I had a large extended family network family known the Gregory family, who I write about a lot in the book. And there were a lot of uncles. So I sort of adopted. I became very adept at adopting adults to play the roles that I needed in my life.
So until you made the documentary film, you really had were left to imagine the whole backstory of your life?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually had to use every reporting skill I'd ever learned in order to research it. I had to dig through genealogical backgrounds. I dug through court records to find wedding records. I used the Social Security database in order to find out when people were born and when they had died, where they were born. I mean, you know, it was really a detective hunt.
You also have a brother. Is he also mixed race?
My brother? No, my brother's white. My mother had three children. Actually, all of them out of wedlock. Two of them are white, and then there's me. My brother is 14 years older than I am, and he was born when she was, well, either 15 or 18. This is, again, we just found another piece of evidence. Now, she always told us 18. He just finally got hold of his original birth certificate, which has her as 15. So now we're all wondering again.
But he wasn't shuttled back and forth with you.
So. He actually was a little bit worse off. No, he was not shuttled back and forth with me in Atlantic City. He was actually in and out of foster homes most of his life.
Oh, that must have been tougher for him.
It was.
Would think.
His actually most stable period he remembers was the period that my mother was living with my dad. So here he is, a little white boy with a black man as a father, whom he still recalls to this day as the most stable father figure he ever had and remembers him with much affection.
If any place, I'd imagine, would be accepting of an interracial relationship and a mixed-race child, it would be New York City.
Not in the 50s.
And did your mother also feel that it was going to affect her career?
Mostly it was her living situation. She wanted to, they could not find housing. Again, you have to remember, it's 1954. Really, I'm born almost really right at the tail end of the McCarthy period. So it's really before Brown versus the Board of Education, before the Birmingham March. You know, my mother is trying to figure out, you know, how to negotiate this for whatever reasons of her own. I sort of think of her as addicted to being white in some ways. She was not willing to live north of 96th Street, where they could have found housing. Below 96th Street, no landlord was willing to rent to a mixed race couple.
Wow.
And so unable to find housing, then he was unable to work. Things just started falling apart. And then when she lived with me, we actually lived in an apartment building that still stands across the street from ABC on 67th, which back in those days was not so glamorous. It was a much more sort of low-income neighborhood. And the neighbors got together a petition to evict us because of me.
So this wasn't just a selfish act on your mother's part.
She didn't.
Although giving your brother up to... Yeah.
Although I've met other people my age whose mothers made the decision to live north of 96th Street. I mean, yeah. Looking at it dispassionately as a reporter, I can say, well, okay, she could have chosen to live where she could live, but she wasn't willing to do that. So, you know, she made the decision she made, and given who she was... You know, and you know, people go through phases in their life. I think she was a woman in her early 20s and 30s who didn't have a very strong sense of self, and I don't think she was really capable of raising children. So she left me where I could be raised.
My guest is June Cross, who's written a book called Secret Daughter, a mixed-race daughter and the mother who gave her away. It's published by Viking. So how often did you see your mother?
I would see her during school vacations. She wrote me postcards almost every day. After she married my stepfather, Larry Storch, who was in F Troop, I would go out to California. And then it was this very odd thing, because I grew up in a very staid middle-class black family that did not...
They were more conservative than
your white family. They were much more conservative.
And
then I'm out in Hollywood with these sort of wild... white people. And I would come home and Aunt Peggy worried that I was going to be under the influence of those crazy people. And so I was sort of brought to heel. I was, you know, being trained to come back and be normal when I came back to Atlantic City. But I would go out and I would spend a month usually the month of August, I would spend in Hollywood. And then I'd spend the rest of my year in Atlantic City.
And was Larry Storch a decent stepfather?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, any star... Stars and parents don't quite go together, right? You know, they're by the nature of being a star is that you're somewhat self-absorbed and absorbed in your career. And Yeah, so Larry was the only stepfather I had, and I love him dearly. But fatherhood was something that I think eluded him, the nature of it. You know, so as the normal things that you think of as a dad, a disciplinarian, you know, no. You know, Larry was a great friend, and he was a funny guy. He still is a funny guy. And
I know he's been on the show.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a wild man, which is what makes
him lovable.
And he's
a bit of a wild man, and part of him never grew up, and that's the part he draws on to be the comedian. But yeah.
Were you accepted by your black relatives? I mean, totally accepted? Well, you were lighter skinned than many of them.
I basically, you know, in the sort of the web of deceit that I sort of built for myself, I adopted my extended family as my family. My father's mother actually would not accept me because she didn't want to have a half black bastard child, which was what she called me. My mother's mother also wouldn't accept me because she didn't accept the idea that her daughter, my mother's mother was a Mormon. My mom was never a practicing Mormon, but nevertheless, some of those ideas were in her head.
At that time, Mormons felt that blacks were less than human. That's changed.
Yeah,
well,
it was
years.
The mark of, considered the mark of Cain, not less than human, but they had been marked by Cain. Not by Cain, marked Ham, the mark of Ham for having disrespected Abraham. So there was a whole mythology around that made blacks less than.
So your Aunt Peggy and your Uncle Paul were the only people who really accepted you and just treated
I grew up in a very nurturing environment, and I'm very thankful for that. I don't think I would have grown up to be a producer on the NewsHour or at CBS or a professor at Columbia had I not had the nurturance that I had in that community in Atlantic City.
But in an odd way, your story isn't all that different from, I would say, the 98% of all African Americans in this country, because there's a mixed race story, even if it goes back to slavery times, in most families.
I don't think it's most African Americans. I think most Americans are mixed race. It's just most Americans don't want to accept the fact that they're mixed race and choose through this one drop rule to say, you know, if you look a certain way or if you can identify a parent that looks a certain way, therefore you are, you know, and that's sort of always the question to what are you boils down to the what do you look like you are. As opposed to how you really identify.
Well, there's a few chapters here about getting your hair done, and that seems to symbolize an awful lot of stuff.
It did. It did for me. It was sort of the way, all black women have a thing with their hair. I had a terrible thing with my hair because my hair was most identifiably for me as a kid the way that I was different than mom because she kept it cut very, very short. So I was very... people wondered whether I was a girl or a boy, so I had a lot of those kind of issues growing up. And then when I moved to Atlantic City, the first thing I wanted was a ponytail, so then we had to start letting it grow out, and that became a whole other set of things. You know? And now I wear it in dreadlocks, so I've come to terms with it. And that was a real process. Getting to love my hair in its natural state has been a real process for me that was liberating in a lot of ways that I will have to write a second book about.
Do you think it helped that you grew up with the civil rights movement?
I do. I actually think I went through the same stages that African Americans as a whole went through. It's almost like we were all born when Brown. We were all liberated as a people and born in some ways in 1954 when the Supreme Court decided that segregation was not constitutional. And I went through that period of anger in the late 60s. I was angry at my mother. I was angry at Aunt Peggy. I was angry at everybody. I found a way to resolve it, and I'm not sure that as a people, African Americans as a whole, have figured out a way to resolve that anger sort of post-Martin Luther King's assassination, and it's still something we're struggling with.
You were in L.A. when the Watts riots broke out.
Yeah, now, I was in my mother's house. I could see the fires burning from her window.
Getting back to the hair, did you ever go through a period where you wanted it straight?
I wore it straight for a long time. In fact, I was an on-air correspondent for the NewsHour, and I wore it straight during that period of time. Yeah, so there was a long period in which I wore it straight. I mean, you know, if you work in corporate America, and I imagine even now if I worked for a mainstream network, I probably would have my hair straightened because you're more it's weird. It's a very subtle thing to explain. The difference in how the majority of whites respond to you when you look like you belong as opposed to having the hair in locks. It is just, it's very subtle. but it's there, and I've noticed.
You mean
it.
If Halle Berry had her hair in locks?
Why does Halle Berry now have long hair? When Halle Berry had short hair, she was beautiful. All of a sudden, Halle Berry has long hair. Toni Braxton had short hair. She was beautiful. Now Toni Braxton has long hair. America wants its women with long, flowing hair. That's just the American standard of beauty.
Why do you think race continues to be a major issue in America? I mean, W.E.B. Du Bois talked about it as being America's problem for the 20th century. Now we're in the 21st century. It doesn't look like anything has changed much.
I think of race as the national religion of the United States. You identify yourself along a continuum of how you look on a scale of black to white. And even though religion, you know, we also identify as Christian, evangelical Christian, Catholic, whatever. All of these things are tinged by race. I mean, I've interviewing Muslims in the United States. There's friction between Muslims who come from the Middle East and black Americans who have converted to Islam over who's more authentically Islamic. And it always comes down somehow to skin color. Everything in this country seems to come down to skin color. And how we lose that, I don't know, until we begin to accept the idea that everyone in the United States is more of a mixed race than we want to think.
And I understand now you're working on a documentary about New Orleans, a city where
race is a key factor. A city torn apart by race and class, much as my own family was. I think that's why I was drawn to the story.
Just one thing, more thing. Was it odd as a journalist who's always looked into other people's stories to suddenly start investigating your own?
Yes. It was painful.
Now you must know how some of your victims feel.
Oh, I did. I mean, I was relating to the guy, the author, Mr. Carrier, earlier, talking about he couldn't work on his next project because he's spending too much time talking about himself. It's terrible. I literally couldn't do it, and I still find it difficult to talk about it, and I just had to keep writing until I wrote down to the bones of it. That was the only way I could make it happen.
Well, thank you so much for coming by today. June Cross, her book, Secret Daughter, A Mixed-Race Daughter and the Mother Who Gave Her Away, published by Viking. Thanks for listening to the Leonard LoPate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org. or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.